Mark your calendars for Wednesday, August 1st. Chapel Hill Public Library's Friends of the Library Group is holding their monthly book club meeting, Books Sandwiched In, 11:30 a.m. on that day at the library. Everyone's invited. It's their season opener as they get into the 2018-2019 academic calendar year. And every year when they start the academic calendar, they always read the UNC selection for the Carolina Summer Reading Program, and the author is usually there as well. This year, the book is called Popular: Finding Happiness and Success in a World That Cares Too Much About the Wrong Kinds of Relationships. The author is Mitch Prinstein, who is a psychology professor at UNC, also the director of clinical psychology there, and he joins us now here in the studio. Thank you for being here today.
Sure. Yeah, thanks for having me.
So, different kinds of popularity. I know the one that I'm personally seeking is probably the wrong one. So how did the project get started? What got your interest up about it?
Yeah, no one has a neutral feeling about popularity, right? I mean, we all think back to high school and, you know, probably the majority of people wish that that went a little bit differently or that they were maybe more cool, you know. It turns out that's just one kind of popularity. There's a different type referred to as likability that we start having as early as 3 years old. And unless we do something about it, that level of likability at 3 will be the same as when we're 13 or 33 or 103. And that is completely different from status or that kind of high school mean
right.
girls, you know, popularity that probably jumps in our head.
We're like, you've got high status, but everyone hates you, right?
Exactly.
Kind of thing.
In fact,
yeah.
That's totally what the research shows is that, you know, those people that are high in status, those people don't really like them and they do really poorly later in life. So some of us may be stuck in high school or kind of still pursuing the kind of popularity that will actually hurt us long term.
Okay. So, and I think we can all, if we've got like high school memories or you're thinking about Mean Girls or like I'm thinking about Married with Children where you've got Al Bundy who's just sort of reliving high school memories forever. You've got that image in your head, or some of us know people who kind of peaked in high school, right? Like they were
yep.
super popular in high school. Everyone thought they were going places and then other people ended up being more successful. And this is that, right?
It's exactly right.
Yeah.
I mean, there's been research that's followed these kind of really cool kids from high school and middle school into their late 30s and beyond. And what they find is that compared to the, you know, the geeks or the average folks, you know, they are much more likely to have relationship problems, problems with addiction.
Mm-hmm.
They get hired but quickly fired or demoted. They have anxiety, depression. So it's probably a good thing if you were not the coolest kid in high school growing up.
What were you in high school?
Oh, my God. The antithesis of cool, right?
Yeah,
I was
yeah.
super short, and I had, like, perfect attendance in school since kindergarten.
Oh,
I was,
nice.
You know, like a nerdy kind of, you know, bifocals wearing, you know, under 5 foot tall high school kid. So, but that's what's really interesting. I think I kind of, like a lot of people, you know, wanted to be cool in high school or something. And it's been so fascinating to realize that when you look in adult life, it's about that likability. It's about making other people feel valued and included, that it totally pays off. It makes you live longer. It
yeah.
makes you have fewer illnesses. It makes you more likely to get promoted, higher salary, better marriages, and even your kids do better a generation later if you're likable.
Where does the switch happen? Like, people are likable when they're young, elementary school, and those are the popular kids, and then you go through the status period in high school, and then it switches back. When does it switch back?
Well, you know, so it all starts at puberty.
Mm-hmm.
So there are neurochemicals that in our brain and transmitters for those oxytocin and dopamine especially that kind of make us suddenly really interested in status, which is kind of defined as visibility and power and influence. Now, it used to be the case that we would graduate high school and we would start caring about likability again. That's not the world we live in anymore. We are in a world where, you know, we are pressing buttons on our phone or watching reality TV in a way that is emphasizing status more than we ever have before as a human species. That's what got me to really want to write the book, is that we are all careening down a path towards a horrible outcome. And I wanted to, like, blow the whistle and be like, wait, what, you know, why are we all valuing status so much more now compared to, you know, generations ago?
Do people who have high status still experience all of those negative outcomes, even in a society that values it more later in life?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I mean, it's tricky because there's people that have the highest status will tell you they spend so much time focusing on that status, caring about their image and their visibility, that it's hard for them to develop real relationships with other people. Mm-hmm. And that's actually what the people in relationships with those folks will say, that person's only interested in me as a mechanism, a vehicle to make them seem higher in status.
Interesting. Speaking with Mitch Prinstein again, the book is called Popular: Finding Happiness and Success in a World That Cares Too Much About the Wrong Kinds of Relationships. Carolina Summer Reading Program book this year. And if you want to meet the author and talk about the book, Chapel Hill Public Library is doing Book Sandwiched In a week from this coming Wednesday. August 1st is the day, 11:30 at the Chapel Hill Public Library. So tell us about the nature of the study that you did.
So the research in the book, some of it is my own research, but it's really talking about research that's been done for decades now by many, many psychologists. And also, we really drew on, a lot of different information from genetics and anthropology, just really try to understand this phenomenon, this, idea of popularity that we all love or loathe.
Yeah. So likability is the type of popularity to seek. Status popularity is the type to kind of push away from. Is this something that can be cultivated? Can you cultivate likability, or are there people that are just naturally more likable?
There are people where it comes pretty easily for them. They are more naturally likable. But the big mistake is that a lot of us think that whatever we experienced when we were kids, it's kind of set in stone. It's totally wrong. In fact, there's a lot of research that says that without intervening, we tend to repeat the same patterns over and over. There's a really cool study that shows that your men's salary is related to their height, but it's not related to their height in their 30s when they're earning the salary. It's related to how tall they were when they were 16. And the idea there is that we continue to have an image of ourselves from when we were adolescents that sticks with us, that influences every interaction that we have for the rest of our lives. In the book, one of the things we talk about is how to break that, how to look at the kinds of information you're getting in front of you right now and realize you're not 16 anymore and you're kind of misinterpreting the world based on who you were as a teenager.
So what can you do?
Well, so there's a rich tradition of this in clinical psychology. In fact, for those experiencing true difficulties, it would even be akin to cognitive behavioral therapy. But it generally has to do with checking in with your gut instincts and finding out that sometimes they're wrong. You're making assumptions, you're having biases in how you see interactions around you that more times than not are incorrect. A really cool study showed that people that had difficulties with popularity watched a video of positive and negative interactions. They spent 3/4 of the time using an eye tracking device, they could say, only staring at the negative interactions in that experience. Whereas people with more positive backgrounds saw the world as a much sunnier, happier, positive place. We got to break that. We got to realize that we're wearing thick lenses that we've been, that's been biasing our vision for maybe decades, and really work to reverse that.
So does that mean that people who are kind of more positive in outlook can get a better sense of the world as a whole by seeing the negative side as well as the other way around?
That's right.
Yeah,
so, people that are really popular and see that world through rosy-colored glasses, they actually have some deficits. They're not really able to withstand rejection. They're not as empathic. And they're not really able to understand how to pick up on critical feedback. So another reason why there are some good things that come from not having been so popular growing up.
Yeah. So are there things that we can do to kind of train that muscle?
Yeah, absolutely. The thing that we need to do is really to check into our assumptions and check in with other people with social interactions. Make sure that initial instinct to kind of respond in a depressive way or in a hostile way, don't act on that every time. Especially if you're feeling emotional about something, it seems these biases really come jumping up to the fore. The second thing we have to do is we have to try out experiments. We have to kind of think about, what if I walked into this room acting as if I'm sure everyone would accept me? There's really cool research that I talk about in the book on social mimicry, the way that other people will emulate your nonverbals, your verbals, and even your mood, but then later attribute their behavior to you being so cool and likable, rather than them realizing that it was just a simple game of imitating you beyond their conscious awareness.
Oh, that's interesting.
That's really neat.
Oh, man. Okay, so speaking with Mitch Prinstein, the book is called Popular. It's the Carolina Summer Reading Program book this year. And I'm just bouncing off of what you're saying, because this is fascinating. So I know a thousand different directions with this with this topic that we could go in. What's the most fascinating kind of iteration of this whole issue or this study or this book that you discovered that you you learned that you love sharing with others?
I mean, the thing that to me as a parent is kind of freaking me out because my kids are not yet adolescents, but, you know, when they do become adolescents, is research that shows what's happening to adolescents' brains when they're on social media. And what they found generally is that there's a part of our brains that's kind of like the brain's brakes. It's called the prefrontal cortex. It kind of helps us to inhibit any impulsive or, you know, emotionally laden response. What they found was that if they show pictures kids on an Instagram-like profile of things that are like dangerous, illegal, immoral, risky, then that area of the brain lights up, which is good. You know, we want them to not, you know, want to approach those kinds of activities. But if they show them the same pictures with icons that show that the picture is getting lots of likes or retweets or follows or, you know, any
social media. Thumbs up sign on the bottom right, yeah.
You see that? That prefrontal cortex activation shuts off. So it's shocking and scary to think that there's something about popularity, about the way that we see that other people seem to have, you know, kind of air quote liked something, that actually is changing the way that our brain is responding to images. And as a parent, it scares me to think that all of our good work on helping kids learn right from wrong could be undone by the time that they're spending on social media unmonitored. So for me, that's a wake-up call if there ever was one.
Yeah, so sort of keeping that in mind, and probably we'll get back to social media on this, if you're a parent with someone who's about to enter that period of adolescence where the brain starts shifting from likability into status and you want to maybe put a halt on that, is there anything that can be done?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so first of all, like any other behavior that we know will lead to risk, but we're never going to actually get kids to never do it again.
Yeah.
We got to encourage moderation. And we also have to talk with kids about what they're experiencing on social media. So when I talk to parents groups, I tell them, you know, a good way to approach that would be to say, what would you think if you saw a lot of people liking this kind of image or this kind of post? Why do you think they're clicking like? Is it because they actually like what they're seeing, or are they just fronting to make themselves a little more popular or try to elevate their own status metrics? Really engaging with kids in that conversation. The Pew Research Institute is a nonpartisan fact tank. They found that parents speak with their kids about their offline relationships. 85% of parents do that. Mm-hmm. But only 30% of parents speak with their children about their online social experiences. This is a blind spot, and we need to fix it.
Speaking with Mitch Prinstein again, the book is popular, Finding Happiness and Success in a World That Cares Too Much About the Wrong Kind of Relationships. People want to find out more. Where can they go?
They can go to MitchPrinstein.com if they'd like, or my UNC faculty webpage, which is available through the Department of Psychology and Neuroscience.
Awesome. And again, Wednesday, August 1st at the Chapel Hill Public Library, 11:30 a.m. for Book Sandwiched In. He'll be there, book discussion, and a whole lot more. Mitch, thank you so much for being here. This is fascinating.
Sure. Yeah, thanks for having me.